from the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins. Sitting in today for Tony is our own Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships for Family Research Council.
Welcome to the Thursday edition of Washington Watch. I am Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships. I am filling in for Tony Perkins on this afternoon and for the remainder of your week. We are headed into a holiday weekend. I hope you have something fun planned. Well, Veterans Affairs Secretary Robert Wilkie and Vice President Mike Pence both took a stand for the right of veterans to display a Bible at a New Hampshire VA hospital in the face of a lawsuit from the Military Religious Freedom Foundation. In just a minute, I'll talk with Michael Berry, Attorney and Chief of Staff with First Liberty Institute, about his suit and the VA's new guidelines. In my second segment, a Kentucky Christian t-shirt maker who refused to print homosexual pride shirts before a local parade goes to court. I'll talk with Alliance Defending Freedom attorney Jake Warner. At the bottom of the hour, just when you think higher education can't possibly get more liberal, North Central College in Naperville, Illinois, is mandating all students take a political correctness module to determine each student's level of privilege. I've got a lot to say about it. And at 42 past the hour, I'll talk to Beckett Cook. 10 years ago, Beckett was a gay man living a successful life in Hollywood. But everything changed when God rewrote his story. Beckett's new book is entitled A Change of Affection, A Gay Man's Incredible Story of Redemption. Go to TonyPerkins.com for resources and information about today's show. We'll also have some action items there and more information about things we've recently written on today's topics. As a reminder as well, follow Tony on Twitter at T Perkins or me at Sarah P. Perry. Well, President Trump has been a president that has restored religious liberty to many aspects of public life, and in no more obvious way has his appointment of Robert Wilkie done just that. So in direct contrast to the hostility of the Obama administration to religion within the public square, including the military, Vice President Mike Pence spoke to the 101st American Legion National Convention in Indianapolis, Indiana, and made a powerful defense of religious liberty at the VA. Let's listen.
And as we meet the health care needs of our veterans, let me make you another promise. This administration will always make room for the spiritual needs of our heroes at the VA as well. You might have heard even today that there's a lawsuit to remove a Bible that was carried in World War II from a missing man table at a VA hospital in New Hampshire. There's a lawsuit underway. It's really no surprise because under the last administration, VA hospitals were removing Bibles and even banning Christmas carols in an effort to be politically correct. But let me be clear. Under this administration, VA hospitals will not be religion-free zones. We will always respect the freedom of religion of every veteran of every faith. And my message to the New Hampshire VA hospital is the Bible stays.
Well, joining me to discuss the fight for religious liberty at the VA is Michael Berry, Attorney and Chief of Staff with First Liberty Institute. Mike, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be back with you.
Okay, let's do a fact check first. I want to find out whether or not the Obama administration really tried to eliminate religious symbols from the VA healthcare system, because I can already hear heads exploding over at the Military Religious Freedom Foundation. So was Obama hostile to expressions of religious faith within the VA context?
Well, I mean, the short answer is yes, but you know, probably in ways that we might not expect to see. You know, I don't think that under Obama we saw, you know, federal officers or officials walking around the VA with, you know, with the proverbial Bible police or anything like that. But what you did see was through regulations and policies, very subtle things. We saw an overt hostility to religious expression and religious freedom, But what's interesting is whenever they got called out on it, you know, they would always backtrack and say, oh, it was a misunderstanding, or, oh, you know, we need to take a closer look at that. And you know, so but the short answer is yes, absolutely, especially when you compare it to the current administration.
I would agree with that. And we understand that Robert Wilkie has taken it upon himself to clarify some of the sort of longstanding inconsistency between each of these independent VA medical facilities. So talk to me a little bit about the updated Veterans Administration regulations as concerns religious symbols.
Well, the important thing to know about the new policy under the VA is really how it compares to the old policy. And again, this goes back to the Obama administration. And this is an example of where it was kind of these subtle ways that they opened the door for religious hostility. So, for example, under the old policy, each individual facility director had the discretion to decide whether they were going to allow a Bible to be displayed on a missing man table, or a nativity scene, or a menorah in the lobby, and during those holiday seasons, et cetera. And under the new policy, the VA secretary himself, Secretary Wilkie, basically said, it's no longer up to each individual facility director. I'm establishing one policy for the entire VA that says, under Supreme Court precedent, all displays with religious symbols and religious expression are presumptively constitutional and presumptively permissible. So that is a much stronger statement in favor of religious freedom and religious expression in the VA.
So you represent the Northeast POW MIA Network, who was the donating organization of the Bible that appears in question in the lawsuit that Vice President Pence mentioned specifically. And this was brought by a client of the Perpetually Offended Military Religious Freedom Foundation. So explain a little bit to me why someone might take offense to a Bible on a display that permits a Bible or a religious text as part of its actual structure. And the POW MIA, for those who are not listening, they can bring in these remembrance tables as an outside organization. They are allowed to bring them in. So explain to us a little bit about why someone might have taken offense in this particular situation to a Bible when a religious text is permissible.
You know what, Sarah? You know, I'm a lawyer and I'm supposed to have an answer for every question. You've actually stumped me. I have no earthly idea why somebody would be offended by the presence of a Bible on a missing man table. And in particular, this Bible, because of the significance that this Bible has. Many may not know is that this Bible was donated. It was the personal Bible of a World War II POW. Mm-hmm. He's 100 years old. He's still alive and doing very well in Bedford, New Hampshire, and his name is Herk Streitberger. He was shot down over Germany during World War II and spent time in a German POW camp and actually escaped. And I know we don't have time to get into it, but his escape story is just fascinating and riveting. But he escaped, and when he finally got home after the war, his mother gave him this Bible, really just as a keepsake and an heirloom, and he donated it to our clients, the Northeast POW MI Network, so that they could include it in this display. And so the fact that somebody now walks by it, you know, they don't have to look at it if they don't want to, but if they choose to walk by and look at it, the fact that they're offended by its presence on there, it just tells me that they have no connection to our history or our past or our heritage as a nation and as a military. And to do something that would desecrate that display or try to force that Bible to be removed, that's a slap in the face and an insult to not only Herk Streitberger, but to all veterans.
Absolutely. And of course, we are naturally brought back to the notion of the Supreme Court's ruling in the Bladensburg Cross case, in which there was that additional element of the inextricable link between history and religion, the element of memorializing something, even though there is a religious component or a religious imagery to it. So this is really a two-for-one shot. So this organization bringing suit on behalf of their offended client is really not only gutting the Bible itself, but gutting the remembrance of a very significant military display. So there are so many other angles to this that it, to me, seems as though this is an organization and a client that is offended to the extent that they are willing to divorce the history of what happened overseas, the importance of those particular battles, and this individual's service, and say it is worth that to us to make sure that there is no appearance of government endorsement of religion, which you and I know is not endorsement at all.
Yeah, one of the interesting and really it's kind of sad, but it's fascinating that if you look at the International Committee of the Red Cross, they were allowed to go and survey the POW camps, right, to inspect them and to make sure that the prisoners had adequate food and shelter, et cetera. And they were allowed to ask the prisoners and interview them about is everything okay? I mean, is there anything you need? One of the top complaints that they received from POWs during World War II was that all of their religious books had been confiscated. Bibles and other religious texts, the Germans, the Nazis confiscated those things from the POWs, and they complained about that. And here we are, decades later, where we want to include a Bible as a way to honor and remember those POWs, and yet you have Mikey Weinstein and his organization doing the very thing that the Germans did, or trying to do the very thing that the Germans did, which is confiscate a Bible from a from a display in this case. So it's just a tragic irony in this case, a sad irony, and really a sad commentary on just how far and how low Mikey Weinstein and the Military Religious Freedom Foundation are willing to stoop in order to get their way and to try to bully the government. And I'm so proud of Secretary Wilkie for standing strong and saying we will not be bullied by these types of nonsensical lawsuits.
I was really encouraged, as I'm sure you were, about his interview with the Washington Times, talking about the fact that your offense does not give you standing to prevent other people from worshiping, displaying, utilizing, or in any other way employing religious imagery, religious symbolism. So what happens now to the lawsuit in New Hampshire?
Well, First Liberty, on behalf of our clients, the veterans organization that put the display there, we have filed a motion to intervene because right now the lawsuit's only between this individual who's supported by the MRFF and the VA. And our position is, look, whatever you guys end up deciding between yourselves, nobody has yet heard, had the position and the interests of our client, the organization that actually put the thing there, adequately represented. So we filed a motion to intervene, and we are hopeful that the judge will issue a ruling on that, basically allowing us to enter the lawsuit sometime in the next week, several weeks here. And after that, we're off to the races, and we're going to defend that Bible, just as the vice president said, the Bible stays.
Mike Berry, Chief of Staff at First Liberty Institute, has been my guest today. We'll be watching the case in Manchester, New Hampshire very carefully. You are listening to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Well, coming up next, a Kentucky Christian t-shirt maker who refused to print homosexual pride shirts for a festival goes back to court. I'll talk with Alliance Defending Freedom attorney Jake Warner coming up next.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
Are you concerned with the state of our nation? Do you want to protect and promote religious freedom, the sanctity of life, free speech, and our children's educations? Today we see a growing threat against our values on the news, on our college campuses, in our elementary schools, at our public libraries, and in our courts. Every year in Washington, D.C., thousands of conservatives attend FRC Action's Values Voters Summit. From October 11th to the 13th, come to our nation's capital to mingle with and hear from key conservatives who are bringing real change to Washington, D.C., and learn how you can too. FRC President Tony Perkins will be there, along with Ali Stuckey, Bill Bennett, Dana Lash, Oliver North, and U.S. House and Senate leaders. The 2020 elections are right around the corner, so this is one weekend you won't want to miss. We provide free scholarships for students. Register online at valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808. That's 1-877-372-2808.
Are you looking for timely and honest coverage of the latest news? Do you find it difficult to sort out what is true and what is false from the media? Family Research Council is here to help. FRC President Tony Perkins' daily Washington Update email newsletter addresses the most important current events affecting religious freedom, the protection of life, marriage and family, and more, not only in Washington, but around the world. The Washington Update's daily articles cover a range of topics, from underreported stories about transgender activists' efforts to infiltrate our schools to updates on court cases fighting for religious freedom, parental rights, and the protection of life. Don't miss this critical, in-depth analysis of the day's most essential stories that are shaping our nation's future. Learn more and subscribe by visiting frc.org/update. Again, that's frc.org/update.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships. I am sitting in for Tony Perkins on this Thursday edition. Well, if this has the echoes of something familiar, there is a reason why. A Kentucky print shop owner's decision to not make homosexual pride t-shirts in 2012 because it went against his religious beliefs was just argued before the Kentucky Supreme Court this past Friday. Blaine Adamson, the owner of Hands On Originals in Lexington, declined to print the shirt based on his First Amendment rights. And he calls his shop Hands On Originals. His supporters held a press event in the Capitol Rotunda following the Supreme Court arguments. And he said it has always been his passion to take his customers' ideas and make them better, but noted that he, quote, never thought that in pursuing this passion, it would generate some controversy. But that's exactly what I've experienced since declining to print shirts for the 2012 Gay Pride Festival, end quote. Joining me with his analysis is Alliance Defending Freedom attorney Jake Warner. Jake, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Jake, it seems fairly self-evident that a business owner, a private business owner, has the right to turn down service that violates his Christian convictions. And in fact, we have seen, I'm sure all of us listening and all of us here at FRC have seen service signs that say we reserve the right to refuse service to anyone. It seems self-evident, but apparently it's not. What's your take?
Well, Blaine serves everyone. He just can't print all messages. And you hit the nail on the head. The government shouldn't force people to express messages that violate their deepest beliefs. And just to give some background on Blaine's case, as you mentioned, Blaine operates Hands On Originals. It's a Lexington-based print shop. And back in 2012, Blaine declined to print T-shirts that promoted a local gay pride festival. But while Blaine serves everyone, he just can't print every message. Blaine offered to connect the requesting organization with another printer who would create the same shirts for the same price. But after that, the organization filed a complaint accusing Blaine of discrimination. Thankfully, Blaine won before multiple lower courts, but the government appealed to the Kentucky Supreme Court, and we just had argument on that case this past Friday.
Okay, so arguments were just held, and do you have a sense, based on the questioning from the judges, how the court is going to rule on this issue?
We're optimistic that the Kentucky Supreme Court will affirm the lower court's decision, which ruled in favor of Blaine and his right to print messages consistent with his deepest belief. So we have every reason to believe that the Kentucky Supreme Court will uphold that fundamental First Amendment right.
And there is here sort of that additional component of forced speech. And these individuals who could have sought out a number of different other organizations who were willing to print messages without any moral qualms whatsoever seem to have a radar about the ones owned and operated by Christians who cannot, in being faithful to their belief that the Bible is the inherent word of God, they cannot seem to go to another provider. So they are requiring, in my estimation, and you give me your perspective, that there must be the moral imperative of submission or else.
Well, I don't know the motives of these folks bringing lawsuits against our clients, but what's clear is that our clients, Blaine, as well as two filmmakers in Minnesota, Carl and Angel Larson, and others that we represent, they serve everyone. They just can't create speech promoting every message. And that's very clear here in Blaine's case. For example, a few years back, Blaine printed materials for a lesbian singer who actually sang at the Lexington 2012 Pride Festival. So what becomes clear is that our clients really do serve everyone. They just can't print every message. And the First Amendment protects those kinds of expressive decisions.
Were there any questions or any points relative to whether or not there was hostility toward Blaine's exercise of religion on the part of the Human Rights Commission? Because, again, this has sort of echoes of the Masterpiece Cake Shop case, in which the Supreme Court decided, listen, it was very clear to us that the Colorado Civil Rights Commission was exercising overt hostility to Jack Klein. Was there any discussion on hostility to his religious exercise?
Most of the discussion in this case revolved around Blaine's free speech rights. In that way, it was a little bit different from the Masterpiece Cake Shop that the Supreme Court put out last year. Lots of questions about whether Blaine's printed materials are speech and whether he exercises editorial discretion. So a lot of speech discussion at oral argument last Friday.
Now, when are you anticipating a ruling by the Kentucky Supreme Court?
Well, we hope that the court will rule soon, but we don't have a timetable for when the court will do that. Likely it will be in the next few months, possibly in the next month. But whatever the case, we hope that the court will reaffirm Blaine's right to live and work consistent with his faith as soon as possible.
Well, we do as well here at FRC. Alliance Defending Freedom attorney Jake Warner has been my guest today. And I have one last question for you, Jake, before we go. This was a 6-judge panel of the justices here at the Supreme Court. So what happens if there's a tie in this case?
Well, if there's a tie, then Blaine wins, because the lower court decision would remain intact. And that would be good for Blaine, because it affirmed Blaine's right to live and work consistent with his faith. And it said that government can't punish Blaine for the expressive decisions that he makes at his print shop.
So if there is a tie, that's actually good news for Blaine himself in any event, and for us here who are following and championing the cause of religious freedom and free speech. Jake, thanks so much for joining us today on Washington Watch. We are hopeful, and reservedly so, but indicating what's happened recently in the Supreme Court and with other jurisprudence, we are hopeful and prayerful for a good outcome. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, sitting in for Tony Perkins, and there's more campus madness coming up next. North Central College in Naperville, Illinois, is mandating all students taking political correctness modules. I've got a lot to say coming up next.
Did you know that Planned Parenthood was using taxpayer dollars to perform abortions? Recently, the Trump administration made changes to a healthcare policy called Title 10. The changes to this policy now eliminate the loopholes organizations like Planned Parenthood were using to receive taxpayer funding for abortions. Planned Parenthood was hiding behind terms like reproductive health care and services like cancer screenings and contraception distribution, while in reality, they were making money off of abortions. This shift in funding will benefit community health centers that provide needy families with family planning resources and health services, regardless of their ability to pay. It will also benefit pregnancy resource centers that provide care and free resources to women who may be experiencing an unplanned pregnancy. This policy decision is the right move to help and protect American lives. To learn more, visit frc.org/Title 10. That's frc.org/Title 10.
Hi, my name is Bailey. I am serving as an intern at Family Research Council, and it has been a life-changing experience. Interns join FRC's team of experts as they embark upon the mission of advancing faith, family, and freedom in public policy and the culture from a biblical worldview. The FRC internship is a 12 to 15 week program designed to educate and inspire university students who are passionate about public service and who believe that a biblical worldview is fundamental to the reformation of government and culture. As interns, we receive the opportunity to work alongside and be personally and professionally developed by FRC's team of experts. This paid internship offers free housing in the heart of DC, which allows us to be fully immersed in the fast-paced political climate and to build a community with other faithful conservatives in our nation's capital. For more information and to apply, visit frc.org/internships. That's frc.org/internships.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, sitting in for Tony Perkins. TonyPerkins.com is the podcast site. Follow Tony on Twitter at T Perkins or me if you'd like at Sarah P. Perry. ValuesVotersummit.org as we round the corner into the fall, and we know Congress will reconvene in September on the 9th. We are preparing for our biggest event of the year, so go there. You can find out some of our speakers, some of our events and sponsors. We encourage you to find out more and educate yourselves. Well, in further proof that there is a prevalence of left-wing mania in higher education in the United States, Breitbart has recently come out with a new column. Hope Flynn, who is the chapter president of Turning Point USA, which is a conservative political group for students, told Breitbart News that North Central College in Naperville, Illinois, is mandating their students take a political correctness module. English 101, college algebra, and political correctness. And there's your course lineup for freshman year. The goal is to inform each student of their level of privilege. The students were required to talk about race, gender, sexual orientation, religion, and political orientation. Extremely personal questions. And then were asked to describe what their privilege would be. So if they had, for example, a race privilege, a gender privilege, a type of body privilege, they had to document a particular situation and explain whether they had committed a microaggression and whether that was due to any of the privileges they had previously described. Now, microaggression in this era of new speech and the new religion of liberalism typically refers to any instance in which an individual unknowingly or intentionally offends someone belonging to a group that left-wing activists consider downtrodden or marginalized in America. So Flynn explained the college basically described ways for the students to avoid microaggressions and pointed out something that should be apparent to all of us, which is we don't wake up in the morning hoping to offend people. For the majority of the American populace, we are courteous, nice people. And of course, there are aberrations, but I do not want to pay for college tuition for any of my three children when I know a portion of those hard-earned dollars will go directly to a political correctness module, one that helps students understand their political incorrectness, how everyone has unconscious biases, and that these unconscious biases have been dubbed their political incorrectness, which insinuates, according to Flynn, that being politically correct means being unprejudiced and more well-rounded, whereas being politically incorrect, as I would assert I am, and probably many of you are as well, we are not well-rounded. We are prejudiced. We need the thought police. Flynn said that all the students, regardless of their race, gender, or sexual orientation, are being subjected to certain amounts of political incorrectness, and the students were told to fix it within ourselves. But here, friends, is the ultimate outrage. Hope Flynn, again, chapter president of Turning Point USA, said, quote, they said that they weren't saving the answers, but all of this was tied to our student accounts, and we are required to do this, in other words, complete the module. So there's a big part of me that doesn't really believe it's not saved or that it's not anonymous, end quote. And if that is the case, ladies and gentlemen, what do you do with that student data? Are you suddenly placed on a hate list or a politically incorrect list, a to-be-watched list, a far-right activist list? What does a university, a paragon of education and intellectual open-mindedness, do with a list of students who are politically prejudiced? The hyper-focusing on race and other demographics is not unique to North Central College. We have talked about it at length here. In fact, I have discussed everything from campus free speech to Antifa and its relationship with student activists, and in some cases, professors as well. I have talked about the Intercollegiate Studies Institute with my guest yesterday, Charlie Copeland, who has provided an alternative. And it's not all bad news. For example, the College Board just dropped the adversity score that they were using to determine whether or not scores must be weighted for individuals who did not come from privileged backgrounds. So there is some hope. But I will tell you, as we move into this next era, this next political minefield in which Marxism and socialism have become mainstream, we have to be careful of the new dogma. Dogma is the antithesis of anti-intellectualism. Dogma, in this case, the religion of political correctness, the holy trinity of race, sexuality, and gender, they are the center of American higher education. So be careful, little ears, what you hear, and little eyes, what you see. And for my children, they will pay very close attention. Coming up next, I have Beckett Cook, an incredible author, about his story, A Change of Affection, a gay man's incredible story of redemption, here on Washington Watch.
We live in a time of great political division, and this division only intensifies during campaign season. The toxic tone in politics can be discouraging, which makes it a very real temptation for many Christians to wipe their hands of politics altogether. After all, if God is sovereign and controls the heart of the king, as Proverbs says, do we really need to get involved in the messy world of politics? Because political engagement can be divisive, shouldn't Christians abandon politics and direct their energies toward more spiritual pursuits? Christians are called to submit every area of their life to God, which includes how they engage in politics. But they are called to engage biblically. This requires Christians to be prepared to follow their political theology to its logical end and vote for candidates and parties that support clear biblical values. For more information on the Christian's call to engage in politics, visit frc.org/engage. That's frc.org/engage.
Radical abortion laws in New York, Illinois, and Vermont are challenging the sanctity of life. These laws have lifted the few existing restrictions on abortion in the name of family planning and mental health of pregnant mothers. Americans need to take a stand and defend the rights of the unborn. Family Research Council is sending Congress 90,000 baby hats as a reminder that babies should be welcomed with love and warmth, not potential danger. Supporters have already funded over 45,000 hats. We are over halfway there. Join Americans across the nation and donate $9 to send a powerful reminder that young lives need to be cherished. When you take action, we'll send you an End Birthday Abortion certificate that will remind you to pray for born alive babies who are facing the danger of being killed outside the womb. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com for more information. That's endbirthdayabortion.com.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, President of the Family Research Council here in Washington, D.C., and I would like to invite you to join my wife, Luana, and I, along with Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin and former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, for FRC's Israel Tour, June the 2nd through the 12th, 2020. Whether you're sailing on the Sea of Galilee, standing in the ruins of Capernaum, or journeying up to Jerusalem, Israel is unlike any other place on earth. You'll relive the final earthly days of Jesus as you pray in the Garden of Gethsemane. You look upon Golgotha and stand in the garden tomb. The reality of his story will come alive in a transformative way. This one-of-a-kind tour will not only allow you to explore the land of the Bible and the roots of our Christian faith, you'll also hear firsthand from some of Israel's political, defense, and religious leaders. Join us June the 2nd through June the 12th for this life-changing experience. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry sitting in for Tony Perkins on this Thursday edition. I have such an incredible story, and I'm so excited to talk to my next guest. On the Gospel Coalition website, Brett McCracken, who is an author there, opens the story about my next guest in a paragraph that I want to read to you because I think it sets the stage for what is the closest thing to a Damascus Road experience I think I've ever heard in the modern day. Brett wrote, 10 years ago, Beckett Cook was a gay man in Hollywood who had achieved great success as a set designer in the fashion industry. He worked with stars and supermodels from Natalie Portman to Claudia Schiffer, traveling the world to design photo shoots for the likes of Vogue and Harper's Bazaar. He attended award shows and parties at the homes of Paris Hilton and Prince. He spent summers swimming in Drew Barrymore's pool. A decade later, Cook has moved on from that life, and he doesn't miss it. What changed for Cook? He met Jesus. On a momentous day in September 2009, while drinking coffee with a friend at Intelligentsia in LA's Silver Lake neighborhood. Joining me now is Beckett Cook, the author of a new book entitled A Change of Affection, A Gay Man's Incredible Story of Redemption. Beckett, we are thrilled to welcome you to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Sarah. Glad to be here.
So, first of all, I have to say, only Hollywood would have a coffee shop called Intelligentsia. So I have to start with that. And I'm a lifelong East Coast kid, but I will tell you, I have a friend who is a screenwriter out in Hollywood, and she sends me texts. She's a Midwesterner by birth. She says, I can't believe it sometimes, because it really is sort of another planet. So here you are. You are in this coffee shop, unassumingly sitting there with a friend in 2009 drinking coffee. And what happened? Because this is a day that changed not only your life, but your eternity.
Exactly. Yes. Planet Hollywood is a very strange place to be. I've been here for a long time. But that Saturday, my best friend and I, my best friend was gay too, and we noticed a group of young people sitting next to us at a table, and they had Bibles on top of the table, which was very, I had never seen a Bible in my adult life in Los Angeles. So that was, it was a very strange sighting. And we, both of us kind of, my friend and I looked at each other and we were like, what is going on? And we ended up, my friend liked to sort of engage in conversation and stir the pot. And so he encouraged me to turn around and ask them what they were doing. And so I turned around and I said, you know, are you guys Christians? What's the deal? And they said, yes. And I said, well, you know, tell me, what does that mean? Because I grew up Catholic in Dallas. I went to Jesuit schools my whole life. I don't even remember really what Christianity is. Like, tell me what you believe, which is like, you know, a Christian's like favorite fantasy of a question.
Right, of course. We all hope this will happen.
So they explained their faith, and they said they, you know, they were evangelical Christians. They went to this church in Hollywood called Reality LA. And we got into this really good conversation. And then at the end of the conversation, I, of course, got to the $64,000 question. And I said, well, what does your church believe about homosexuality? Is it a sin or not? Or what do you guys believe? And they said, oh, yeah, we believe it's a sin. And that's our stance in our church. And I said, and what's interesting about that moment is I just kind of accepted it because I had had this moment 6 months prior at Paris Fashion Week where I was went to all the parties, went to all the shows, was looking out over the crowd at one of the parties, at Stella McCartney's party, and I just felt this overwhelming emptiness. And I thought, you know, is that all there is to life? And I can't keep doing this. I can't keep going to parties and just, like, meeting people and going on. This can't be my life anymore. And so by the 6 months later when I met those guys at Intelligentsia, I was already open to something. And so when they told me that it was a sin, I was like, huh, okay. And then they invited me to their church the following Sunday. So I had a whole week to sort of think about it. And I, you know, the next Sunday I just woke up and I thought, well, why not just do this? I mean, it's kind of embarrassing. It could be humiliating. And it, you know, if it's not true, it's going to be disappointing. But I just got dressed, got in my car, and I drove to this church in Hollywood.
And here you are. You're there on a Sunday. I'm imagining that this church is probably packed. And you walk in. Are you fearful at this point? Are you thinking, man, I'm wearing my sexuality like a fluorescent sign above my head? Were you apprehensive about walking in? Because I got to tell you.
No, I wasn't. I wasn't wearing a rainbow flag T-shirt. But no, I wasn't fearful. I just had this. I had this kind of expectant feeling. I wasn't nervous at all.
Wow.
I wasn't fearful. I just was like, and so when I walk into this auditorium, it's in a public high school in LA. And when I walked into this auditorium, I was very impressed by the fact that I just was impressed that it wasn't like stained glass windows and bells and candles and smoke. I was very spare and very minimal. But then I heard the Christian worship music that was already playing. The band was already playing. And I just remember at that moment, I was like, oh, I forgot about Christian music. I forgot that existed. And I kind of cringed for a moment. And then I was like, wait a minute, this is not bad. I like it. And then I walked to the front of the auditorium and I just sat by myself. And the pastor comes out and he starts preaching on Romans chapter 7. And his sermons are an hour long. And while he was preaching, all of this, everything started shifting in me. Every word he was saying, every sentence he was saying was resonating as truth in my mind and my heart. And I was like, this is the gospel? Like, it was turning everything I had ever understood what religion was on its head. And wow. I was literally on the edge of my seat the entire time and just captivated by his words. And so he was just preaching the gospel, and it was Tim Chaddick. He's an amazing preacher. And so by the end of the sermon, I was like, wow, I don't want him to leave the stage because I want to hear more. But he left. And then, he told people there were people on the side of the church in the prayer ministry if you wanted to get prayed for anything. And so there was another set of worship for 30 minutes. And so I in that moment, I was like, should I go over and ask for prayer? If I do, it's going to be weird and awkward.
Oh,
but maybe.
Wow.
And I just was like, okay, I'm just going to go and do this. I'm here. I might as well go all the way. So I walk over to this guy and I say, hey, I'm here. I don't know what I believe. And he said, okay, let me pray for you. And he prayed for me. It was seemed very intense and long and loving. And then I walked back to my seat, and that's when I just was like processing the prayer, the sermon, the music, and then all of a sudden the Holy Spirit just flooded and overwhelmed me. Mm. And God in that moment just kind of, it was like, I'm God, Jesus is my son, heaven's real, hell's real, you are now adopted into my kingdom, welcome. And
oh,
I just
wow.
bawling. I just saw the holiness of God, like Isaiah in the temple, and I just came undone. And I was crying and crying for 25 minutes for the rest of the service. And in that moment, it was like the curtains had parted and I could finally see the truth and reality for the first time. And I was like, wait a minute, this is crazy. God is real and Jesus is real. And so I was just so overwhelmed with joy. I was also crying over my sins. It was kind of like the burden of my sins had just fallen off, like in Pilgrim's Progress. And I was just crying over that. And, but it was this like amazing, cathartic, euphoric kind of moment. And then I got home after the service and it happened again. God was like, let me show you a little more of my glory. And it was like Moses in the cleft of the rock. And he just passed by, like, and I jumped out of my bed in my bedroom and I was like, God, out loud. I mean, I was crying and out loud, I just screamed. I was like, God, you have my whole life. It's it. Like, I'm done. And I knew in that moment to the core of my being that being gay, being homosexual, like all of that was just, that was over. That was my old man. That was my old self. It was done. And it wasn't a part of my life anymore. And I didn't care because I had just met Jesus Christ. And so I was just like, I don't care about that anymore. I don't even want anything to do with that part of my life. And so that it all happened in this like one one moment during that day of September 20, 2009.
I'm talking to Beckett Cook. He has written an incredible book, A Change of Affection, A Gay Man's Incredible Story of Redemption. It is available on Amazon. Okay, so I have to ask this. I'm assuming at this point in your life that a lot of your friends are homosexual themselves. When you go to them with this incredible conversion experience, I have to imagine that they probably were not thrilled about this.
Well, it's funny because I thought, I mean, these were some of my closest friends since high school. Some of them were friends from high school that had moved out here from the East Coast after going to, you know, Ivy League schools. And when I told them, I almost kind of expected it to be really simple. I thought, oh, I'm just going to tell them the gospel and they're going to come to Jesus. But that wasn't the case. They were very, very shocked. And they seemed to be pretty supportive in a way that was almost like, I'm happy that you're happy and I'm happy you found your path, but don't ever try to proselytize me. And it was a very difficult time. It took 3 weeks to tell all of my close friends. I sat them down one at a time. And a couple of my close friends who were gay, once I explained to them that I was no longer going to live that life because I believed it was sinful, they became very hostile. And now, I mean, they've calmed down. 10 years later, they're okay. But it was a difficult time to tell them.
Because you had always identified, I'm assuming, during your adult life as being somebody who was a gay man. So to say, not only have I had this religious conversion experience, but I am entirely leaving the lifestyle in which you have known me for all these years. That's got to be a hard pill to swallow for some people.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like my whole identity changed in a split second. And I was no longer it was weird. It was like a second coming out. You know, I came out as a gay man when I was after college,
yeah.
right after college. And then now I'm coming out as a Christian to a born again Christian to these, my friends. And it was this, you know, double kind of shock. And so it was, but I have to say some of them, actually three of them have come to Christ over the years. So, and have left that life behind. So it's been really great to see that happen. So that's been really interesting. And other people in my life have come to Christ, just by just kind of hearing my story and watching me over the years and they've become Christians too. So it's been really an interesting adventure.
Oh, wow. But what a huge blessing and proof of the fact that God uses one life in ways that we cannot ever anticipate. All right, so I got to ask you a hard question. I'm sure you've been asked it before. There is a lot of talk about being a gay Christian. So the entire movement is driven by pride, right? It's pride parades, mm-hmm. pride festivals, LGBTQ pride. And of course, there has to be an element of understanding on some level that there is a part of this that is not the way it was perfectly designed. So do you believe it is possible to be a gay Christian?
Well, the short answer to that is no. And it's like a square circle, but to break it down a little bit more, it's first, you have to define what is gay, and is it homosexual orientation or is it homosexual behavior? And I would say yes, you can have, you know, same sex attraction and not act on it, deny mm-hmm. yourself and take up your cross and follow Christ, and that's fine. But if you are engaging in homosexual behavior and living that life and labeling, you know, identifying as a gay person, the problem with that is it's become such an identity. And so there's, you know, you see that as righteous. And so there's no, you don't ever repent of it because you don't see it as bad.
Right.
So there's no chance for repentance if you live your entire life believing that homosexual behavior is a good thing and a righteous thing.
Right.
So that's where the trouble is. And I think, there's only two options. You know, if someone claims to be Christian and is engaged in homosexual behavior, they're either in a backslidden state or they're not a Christian at all. There's no other option.
Well, and you know what? We've seen a lot of sort of the pronunciations of having left the faith or having crises of faith, you know, the Josh Harris's or the Marty Sampson's. You went on to get your degree at Talbot School of Theology, and we only have about a minute left. Why a theology degree, and what are you doing now?
Well, God just led me to seminary, and I really felt a strong calling to go, and I think it's all a part of what he's calling me to do now, which is, you know, I wrote the book during seminary, and I think, you know, God's calling me to really help the church, help Christians understand this issue biblically, theologically, from someone who's been on both sides of it. And to help the church understand, because the church is, it's being torn apart because of this issue. And it's to help the church understand, yes, you can still have these convictions, and yes, homosexuality is still a sin. Just because Lady Gaga and other people say it's not, and Taylor Swift say it's
Beckett,
not,
I got to cut you off. Beckett Cook, buy his book on Amazon. This has been Washington Watch. Beckett, we will have you back. Your story is incredible. Thank you for what you bring to the body of Christ. We'll see you tomorrow on Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.